All technology shifts feel impossible until they become inevitable. And I think it's a good reminder for us for the moment that we're in now, and probably right, like the moment that we're going to see for the next several years. If we sort of look back, there have been multiple points in time where we collectively have sort of experienced a significant shift to desktops, to mobile, the internet, more recently, right, immersive technologies, and the metaverse as that continues to evolve. Every time that there's been sort of this general shift in computing platforms, there's always been a side order of skepticism. It's healthy. It's to be expected. Big shifts have required sort of bold moves that sometimes require taking a bit of a risk and continuing to push forward, right, even when it may seem a bit unclear.
Hi, I'm Boaz, founder and CEO of Simply Augmented. And I'm excited that you're tuning in to Shift, a show that explores what it takes to thrive and adapt to the changing workplace in the digital age of remote work and AI. In today's episode, I'm thrilled to have Dan Neves as our guest. Dan is a metaverse solutions lead at Meta Reality Labs and an expert in the space of VR and mixed reality. During our conversation with Dan, we explore his background and experience that landed him at Meta and the work he has been doing at Reality Labs to educate the C-suite at some of the largest companies in the world about Meta's AI and XR strategy. If you're someone interested in how AI and XR is going to factor into the way you engage with your customers, you won't want to miss this episode. It's great to have Dan on our podcast, and we can't wait to learn more from him. Let's get to it. Dan, welcome to the show. It's great to have you.
Thanks for having me. Great to see you, Boaz.
Yeah, I'm really excited about talking to you today. I think there's going to be some good things that we cover. But just to start out with, I want to ask you a few questions about your background. I want to start by just reading to you your background. And if I get anything wrong, you can stop me and tell me and correct me. You started your career with Deloitte as a strategist and consultant. And then you went and were the head of marketing engagement for Zinc. From there, you were the chief of staff at Frame.io, which I love that software. And now you're at Meta, you know, worked with the commercial sales team, now the global metaverse solutions lead with Reality Labs. Yeah, I'm excited about hearing more. Did I get that right?
You did.
Did I miss anything?
No, it was a good rundown. I think I look back and I feel like I colored outside the lines a little bit, or at some points it didn't feel like the most linear path, but it's been a lot of fun along the way. So mix of consulting, some early stage startups, which just an incredible learning, and then the last several years at Meta. So it's kind of wild how quickly the time goes, but it's been a fun ride so far.
What was Zinc?
That was the first startup I was at. It was originally launched as CoTap by a couple of former executives from Yammer who had left after the acquisition of Microsoft. And so it was essentially, think of it as a secure enterprise messaging app. You can almost think of it as a WhatsApp for work. We were really geared towards industries that had a lot of employees that did not sit behind a desk.
Got it.
Healthcare, retail, field service, that traditionally had been underserved by technology, but needed ways to be able to easily communicate and collaborate very quickly. So it was an incredible time, especially to lean into those industries that are not normally or haven't normally been served by sort of corporate technology in the past. So ton of incredible learning. And then along the way, it rebranded to CoTap before it moved along on its journey. And eventually it was acquired by a company called ServiceMax.
I was surprised to see the chief of staff title with Frame.io. Back in the day, I did a lot of documentary work and editing, and we would use Frame.io for a lot of the interaction. And what was the chief of staff job at Frame?
Yeah, I think we'll get into this a little bit later. So that was my first foray into the world of video production, film production. I mean, it was a phenomenal crash course. And so it was one of those opportunities that came along that it's just really hard to pass up. So it was an opportunity to be a chief of staff to the CEO. I had joined just after Series A. So the company, we were still sort of mid to high 20s in terms of number of employees. And then you get this front row seat, basically, behind the scenes of building a business. And the CEO, his name's Emery, was came from the video and film space himself, especially in post-production. And so had just an incredible depth of expertise in the industry. So to kind of see that firsthand, sort of building a company and in a space like that, it was amazing. It was also incredibly challenging because you're sort of essentially right, sort of the shadow to the CEO, right? And so, always looking at every aspect of the company and trying to be an extension of them.
Yeah.
But man, what a phenomenal way to really learn just sort of the inner workings, right? Of trying to build a company, a business, a team, really from the ground up.
That sounds amazing. Well, we'll get into the Meta stuff. I mean, you and I work closely together at Meta. And so we're going to go deeper into questions around that. But before we do that,
I want to ask you a question about your first job. What was your first job where you actually got paid?
Yeah. Oh, man. Great question. So one very, very first job, I was a busboy and a runner in an Italian restaurant, which was, at the time, like first job, I was like, great. I'm making money, getting to interact with people. I ended up eating a lot of pizza and garlic bread at the same time working in that restaurant. And then at the same time, I had a second job. I sold sneakers at Finish Line.
Nice. Retail can sometimes be a really good position for kind of better understanding.
Oh, business. My gosh. And especially, it's funny. I think back to like that experience where like, the last few years have been in, hardware, and we'll talk a little bit about that. So like, this is a very tangible product. I think back to, that experience, like, it doesn't get more tangible, right, than, sneakers, right? Whether it's, Air Max or Jordans, Adidas.
And
I think back to also like in the store, like on the floor, like we would also do demos, right, of different accessories, other products.
Yeah.
And you just get that instant feedback and reaction from people. And so I think both of those jobs were amazing into really being a great intro crash course into, the importance of customer service, sales, and just also like at the end of the day, right, so many industries, it just comes down to people. All right. And that's really what it's about.
How about your favorite job? I mean, I'm sure the job that you do right now is pretty fun, but is it your favorite?
Yeah, I do love the role that I'm in, and I feel very lucky to be in it. But, I will say, I go back to the chance when I was a chief of staff at Frame.io, and I look back at it now, and I think that was, at the time, it was so challenging. But when I look back at it now, I would say that it's probably one of the favorite roles that I was in, because it's very rare, right, to have an opportunity like that where you just get exposed to so much, right, and sort of see something at the ground floor, and then eventually it would later go on to, the company would later go on to be acquired by Adobe. But that was a phenomenal opportunity. I like it because you just get exposed to areas that I had not been previously. So I look back at it now, I would put it up there pretty high. It was plus also it was a really fun space to be in, kind of the sort of post-production video world. I think back to like some of the events, some of the people you get to meet, just it was so different than a lot of the experience I had had up to that point, which I think also made it as fulfilling as it was. But yeah, I think I put that chief staff role up there pretty high because it's just it's a unique position that you're in and a unique vantage point that you get to have.
Especially at that stage of the business. I mean, there was so much action happening at that Series A.
Oh my gosh. And you just, then before you know it, like instantly in a flash, like the company doubles and then the company triples in size and, you're moving headquarters to, you need a bigger office. And then you've got, new announcements and new partnerships that you have. You're expanding, the leadership team. They all happen so quickly, right? But you think back to it and you're like, gosh, like I wish I could have froze time, right, and sort of like enjoyed those moments even more because the speed of it all is just so quick. But yeah, it's fun to be in at that sort of early stage. I think it's just you really kind of can see the impact of what you're doing has not just like for you personally, right, but your team, but also the company. And I think it just brings a heightened level of intensity but also energy behind it.
Yeah, your career has been interesting so far. As you look back, was business a big part of what you guys talked about as a family? What did your parents do for a living? And did they talk about work with you?
Yeah. It's interesting. I would say my parents, probably like many people if they reflect, but I think my parents are like the hardest working people I have ever met. So like growing up when I was younger, my dad worked two jobs. So he is a product engineer and he's always worked in sort of the consumer electronics space. And then he also worked in retail for a bit as well. And so it was, I think back to like with him, I always loved when there was a chance to like go with him to work and visit the office because as a product engineer, and you'll appreciate this, like he had a sort of an office space, but then he had a lab that had all of the different gadgets and devices, which was amazing. Oftentimes they were, some of them were taken apart, some of them were being put back together. And I feel like that sparked a lot of my interest. I think back the work now is like, you've got a very tangible, product you're working with. And then my mom worked in banking and financial services. So like they're obviously, sort of a very different space. I think both of them like really great lessons in terms of like, the importance of hard work and really, following through on what you say you're going to do. And I think we, through each of them, we talked about business in different ways, right? In terms of like how to best work with people, how to treat people, right? Like expectations you have for, the work that you want to deliver. And, each of them also saw different, stages, right? Companies went through different journeys, right? They grew. Sometimes they went through harder times. And I think that was a good learning, sort of early on to also like make sure that you constantly reflect on like what's most important to you, right? And what are you trying to drive towards? because it's helpful to have that plan in the back of your mind.
Yeah, I'm sure it impacts the way that you think about work now and how that plays out in your daily activities. Well, let's talk about that. You know, you and I worked together at Meta during an interesting time when the name changed from Facebook to Meta. And now you have a role where you're talking to a lot of folks outside of the company and telling the Meta story. So can you tell the audience and just describe what you do, what you've done, and how that relates to the enterprise?
Yeah, absolutely. So I've been at Meta now just over 5.5 years, which is kind of crazy when I say that out loud. The time has flown by. So I've been lucky enough to have the chance to work with a lot of the enterprise products that we've been building. So when I first started at Meta, I was working on a product called Workplace, which is a organizational communication collaboration tool. We worked with customers in the US and Canada, which was great. That was sort of our first foray into the enterprise space. And then a few years back, right before the pandemic, I moved into Reality Labs, which is the part of Meta that's really focused around, you know, a mixture of the different hardware and software solutions that we're building. So everything from virtual reality, augmented reality, mixed reality, other products like Ray-Ban Stories, but then also, you know, new experiences we're building like Horizon Workrooms and a lot of the work that we're doing on avatars. So I moved into our enterprise sales team at the time, which I look back now, I'm like, what a wild time it was to move into that team. And again, it was a very early team being formed. We were just in the process of launching sort of the first enterprise product for that group, which was Oculus for Business. And it was an amazing opportunity to work with businesses who were looking to use VR and AR for work-focused use cases, right? So, you know, whether that was employee training and onboarding, collaboration, 3D design, we'll dig into that a little bit more. But it was amazing to sort of see how businesses were leaning into that. And at the time, right, there was really this acceleration, I think, of companies who were exploring those technologies to find new ways for people to work, you know, together to get things done, because the world and especially the workplace, right, was changing so quickly over that time. A few years there on that team, got to work across a mix of different hardware and software products. And then about 13, 14 months ago, moved into Reality Labs executive engagement team. And so it's a team that's really focused on sort of showcasing the art of the possible for external leaders and executives, right? So to help kind of inspire them, to help create some new ideas around possibilities of these new technologies, but also, right, keep them abreast of like, where are the sort of the emerging trends that they as business leaders should be thinking about. So it's a really great mix of these highly immersive engagements, sort of very driven discussions around business outcomes to help them kind of keep a pulse on not just where are things today, but where are they headed so that they can best be set up to thrive and help their organizations move along the way. So that's the role I've been in the last 13, 14 months, and it's been an absolute blast, especially just given the rate of change that we're seeing in the space.
One of the reasons why I was so excited to talk to you is, you know, a lot of people think about VR and Quest as a gaming tool. You know, it's a headset that they wear when they play games. But I know that it's so much more than that. And I think the work that you do, you know, given this podcast is about the future of work and thinking about how things are shifting for people, the pandemic was an interesting moment in remote collaboration. And it speaks to a lot of the ways that you think about the future of work as it relates to the Quest headset and some of the other things that Meta is doing. So can you talk about that? Because so much of what you do is thinking about that hardware and work. So how is that changing and how are you talking to people about that?
Yeah, absolutely. And I feel like, I don't know how much time we have, Boaz, but we could probably go on a long time about the future of work. But it's an amazing topic, I think, to explore. And I think you're right. We saw this acceleration, probably like a decade's worth of acceleration, right? The last few years, like largely driven by the pandemic. But right, it's not just a technology evolution that we're experiencing, but there's also, right, this ever-evolving set of expectations, right, that people have in terms of like where they work, how they work, how to get work done. And so you've got this like intersection of both people and technology, which I think is quite fascinating, right? And organizations are trying to navigate that in their own ways. And so you're right. I think we saw a really interesting set of use cases, right, starting to form, right, as organizations were sort of leaning and starting to explore, you know, more immersive technology. I think one of the earliest flagship use cases is really around, you know, immersive learning and training, right? And so whether that's, some people will say soft skills, others will say sort of human skills, but thinking about like these critical skills that are only going to become, I think, even more and more important, right? Like empathy, you know, navigating difficult conversations, managing bias, diversity and inclusion. We saw a lot of companies starting to lean into that. And I think we're only going to continue to see that just given that the skills that we'll need, right, are ever evolving. Like what we'll need in 5 years, I think we don't even know yet, right, what some of those skills are going to be.
Yeah.
I think what's really interesting is also for organizations that have employees that might work in more technical roles, or have operational tasks, it's a great medium, right, to deliver that type of training to sort of build the muscle memory and proficiency, right? So whether it's employees who work in a manufacturing plant or technicians in oil and gas industry, right? Like they've got these procedures, or even someone like Johnson & Johnson, right? Who uses VR to deliver, you know, really cutting edge surgical training. VR creates this amazing opportunity to build this set of proficiencies so that when you have an employee stepping foot into an operating room to perform a procedure, or they're out on a wind farm, or they're, you know, in a manufacturing facility, they're that much more prepared for the job at hand. And then in some cases, right, you've got organizations that operate in industries that tend to be more high risk, or they have hazards in the workplace. And so thinking about VR as a mechanism for safety training, because so many of these situations, right, you can't recreate in real life without putting people in harm's way, right? But one of VR's, I think, superpowers is that you can recreate these high-stakes scenarios. And so
yeah,
I think
that's a big one.
That's probably a use case that has been around maybe the longest, but I think we're continuing to see so much interest in adoption around that. And I think then you've got, you know, other areas. People then start to think about, okay, beyond training, how do we onboard employees, right, in a more scalable way if they're not showing up to the office, right, in person before? And so that's another area, then thinking about how it moves into the employee experience, but then also expanding out, right, to areas like collaboration. I think many people probably have felt the fatigue of sort of the 2D experience of video conferencing, right, and looking for more immersive ways to feel like, hey, you know, we might be across the country, but how can it feel like we're in the same room or up at the same whiteboard brainstorming or riffing on some new ideas together? I think what's exciting as well, then you move into some other kind of day-to-day, you know, workflow use cases. So I think 3D design has been an incredible area, whether that's designing physical products or designing physical spaces, right? Like new offices or new facilities. I'm always really intrigued to sort of see that. I think it just gets deeper and deeper right into people's day-to-day flow of work, which, you know, ultimately I think, you know, we get to a point where it becomes less of a conversation about technology, right? And more about sort of the outcomes and the outputs that people can have that get enabled by the technology.
The combination of things is kind of interesting too. If you are an industrial designer and you're designing 3D objects and you can have a remote collaboration with people together in a room where you're prototyping and having deep conversation and brainstorming around these products, those are things that are really, really hard to do on Zoom.
Yes. Yeah.
And so to be able to do that in a three-dimensional way, I think is starting to tap some cool things about the technology. You know, one other question I had for you was around Meta AI. You know, recently I've been seeing a lot of posts around AI. You know, that's something that I'm doing now and that I'm really passionate about and interested in. I'm excited about the potential. I know it's something that Meta's been doing for a long time. It's not new, even though there's a lot of hype and excitement around that in the industry. You've been talking a lot about that and posting a lot about that. Can you speak to the way that Meta thinks about AI and also the way that AI and XR are converging in your mind?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's a great shot, because I feel like it is very much, it's a convergence, right? I think that's what makes the moment that we are in right now so exciting, is that you've got a lot of these technologies, like VR and AR, but I think mixed reality is another huge step forward, right, for computing, and then artificial intelligence. And you're right, like it's something that it's been very core to our DNA for a long time, like even going back to the days of Feed. But it's certainly having a moment right now, right? And I think it's taken shape over the last few years, but even obviously more recently, it has gotten a lot of steam. And I think it's really only going to accelerate, right, sort of everything it touches. Just sort of thinking back to some of, you know, where we've been, I think AI and machine learning, it's played a key role, right, in being sort of foundational for a lot of the technology and VR products, right, for many years. I think the breakthroughs, right, in computer vision, you know, really helped make devices like Quest, you know, sort of possible in the first place. But I think what's really exciting is we should see AI, right, sort of really everywhere. I think as we sort of look at new modern VR systems, right? And so even, I think what's particularly interesting is like maybe even in places people don't expect, like as we think about sort of like Quest 3, the next generation touch controllers, they're not going to have sort of the tracking rings around them, right? Like some of the predecessors did. And that's because of, right, a lot of the cutting edge technology with AI, right, to be able to help estimate sort of their position in 3D space. So I think that's a great example. And one, I think, will help just push forward sort of the evolution in that space. But I also think it's going to play a big role from the creation side as well, right? And sort of helping to democratize the ability, right, to create sort of, you know, new spaces and experiences. I think much like we saw with 2D products in the past, and certainly platforms like Instagram have really helped play an important role in, not to be redundant, but creating a space where everyone can become a creator.
Yeah.
I think as we think about sort of this evolution of social immersive experiences, AI is going to play a really important role, right? In sort of helping to give everyone the opportunity to be able to sort of create in a more effective way, right? Whether that's new experiences or to be able to bring in, you know, aspects into something that they're building, it should really be sort of a force multiplier. And then certainly, right, that extending out to the developer ecosystem who's creating some incredible solutions out there. So I think it will only help sort of accelerate the creation, the experiences that we'll see. And so very much, I think the best way to think about it is that it's really a convergence. And
yeah,
it makes for an exciting time for us, right, to be in this space as the industry keeps moving forward in such a fast pace.
Absolutely. I mean, another exciting thing happened in the last 30 days, which I have to ask you about just because it's on everyone's mind. And I know that that you're probably talking to executives about this too, but it was Apple's announcement of the Vision Pro. Talk to me a little bit about how you think about that, what your reactions are to their announcements, and how that plays into what you think about and talk about relative to Quest.
Yeah, you know, a lot of excitement in the space recently, and obviously we shared the market shared our news about Quest 3 that's coming in the fall, which we're looking forward to Connect in September. But so much happening in the space. I think it's remarkable to see. You know, I think we're always happy when people join us in building the future. I think it's also when new players enter the market, it's a sign that the industry is viable and it's growing, as is the growing creator and developer ecosystem, right, which plays a huge role in bringing to life the set of experiences. So I think overall, you can sort of see this as real validation that the work that we've been doing in this space for a long, long time. You know, we're approaching things in a different way. I think we've always been really focused on shipping high quality devices that make them as economically accessible for people as possible, right? And I think this accessibility is key, right? Really means that people are able to connect and collaborate on Quest, right? No matter where they are or what they do. And that'll always continue to be really important to us. But I think overall, right, anytime there's new players in the space, great sign that the industry is really viable and it's growing, as is the ecosystem.
Yeah, I think so too. I'm encouraged by some of the ways that you interact with the headset and with the world using your hands and using your eyes. And I feel like with competition, there's going to be a lot of pushing, both companies pushing really, really hard to advance that kind of technology with the way that you can control the environment.
Yeah. And I think, you know, it's a great point too, that you mentioned, in both in terms of, right, there's, you know, new devices that are coming out, obviously, including the Quest 3 that we shared is coming this fall. But I think you called it a great point about the evolution, the experiences as well, right? Like, I think back to the first time that I tried hands tracking when I was in a headset. And that was sort of a, like, real light bulb moment, right? Where you put the controllers down, and even today, like, you know, we have the opportunity to do, you know, the executive briefings we're delivering with external leaders, and they step into a headset, and you sort of move that moment where they put the controllers down, and then they're interacting with just their hands. It is such a powerful moment. And then you think about, you know, that goes a step further with eye and face tracking to bring out more expressiveness, right, in avatars and in the interactions that we can have. I think you kind of sort of see that the friction is continuing to be reduced, and some of the technology is fading away, and it becomes more about, okay, what are the experiences that we're having? Which for some people, right, it may be gaming, it may be entertainment. For others, it might be fitness, which is an area that I think has really come on the last few years, or maybe, you know, work, right, in sort of the business workflow and day to day. But I think those advancements in the interactions are also extremely, extremely exciting, and should only help, you know, more people, right, be able to experience the technology, which at the end of the day is a credible opportunity for everybody.
Yeah, I agree. And I guess as you look into the future and you think about the form factor turning into glasses, like I'm wearing right now, it seems obvious that the way that you would interact with them is with your hands, and that there's going to be these moments where it doesn't feel like you're putting on a headset to play a game, but you're just going about your business, you're going about your life. And in that way, it just gets more intuitive in the way that you interact with your glasses.
Absolutely. I think, you know, the form factor will play an important role, right? And that's something that, you know, depends on the use case that you're focused on. I think it underscores a really important theme of, like, so much of what we're trying to accomplish, or when we think about, right, okay, this sort of next evolution of the internet, that sense of presence, right, is really at the foundation of so much, right? How does it feel like? And presence in a few ways, like, how can it feel like you and I, or let's say, you know, we collectively can feel like we're in the same space, even though we might be geographically, right, you know, distributed across the country or even the world, that, hey, it feels like we're at the same whiteboard together, or it feels like we're looking at the same model and doing the same walkthrough together. But also, how does the technology help you personally, right, be more present in the world around you, right? And so that you're not, you know, I think up to this point, our relationship with the internet has been something that we've looked at or we've scrolled through, right? Oftentimes through a small screen. And so how does then the technology help enable us to be more present in what's happening around us, right? So that we can more deeply and more richly, right, be a part of that and experience rather than simply look at it.
Yeah, that makes a ton of sense. Well, speaking of that and kind of shifting gears a little bit, one of the things that was telling and interesting about the Apple announcement was no mention of the metaverse. They were using the term spatial computing, which actually has been around for a long time, kind of reintroduced that term. I want to talk about the hype. You know, we're in a kind of a different hype cycle now. We're in the AI hype cycle now. It feels like we've gone through a lot of hype cycles post-pandemic, blockchain and then metaverse and then AI. Really interested to know what the next one's going to be, but I want to talk about the metaverse hype cycle. It feels like we're coming off of that a little bit. I want to ask you about how you think about that. I know a lot of developers are feeling like it's a nicer place to be when they're not having to be in the frenzy of a hype cycle where they can actually develop and take the time to build products. But as someone that's talking to a lot of leaders and C-suites, it feels like there's been a little bit of a dropping off of the use of that word. And talk to me a little bit about how you think about that and all of the hype that went into the name change.
Yeah, this is a great question. I think in many of the conversations that, you know, I've had, my team has had with leaders externally, right? It is definitely something that comes up, right? I think, you know, they obviously see certain headlines that are out there. I think it's good reminder for us that, like, this is not sort of our first tech rodeo, right? If I can use that phrase. But I think back to a statement that I try to reflect on and come back to often is that all technology shifts feel impossible until they become inevitable. And I think it's a good reminder for us for the moment that we're in now and probably, right, like the moment that we're going to see for the next several years. But if we sort of look back, right, there have been multiple points in time where we collectively, right, have sort of experienced a significant shift in sort of computing platforms, whether that was moving, you know, to desktops, to mobile, the internet, more recently, right, immersive technologies, and then the metaverse as that continues to evolve. I think every time that there's been sort of this general shift, right, in technology and computing platforms, there's always been a side order of skepticism. It's healthy. It's to be expected. Somebody, you know, showed me recently, like, headlines and news clippings back in, like, I think it was 94, which is, you know, less than 30 years ago. And it was, you know, different experts and sort of the public talking about that the internet was overhyped and it was hard to understand because it was something, right, that so many people had never seen or experienced before. And I think to me, that's a really good reminder of where we are. I think it's also a great reminder in, you know, where are we ultimately trying to get to, right? You think about the emergence of these new technologies, and especially as we think about sort of like the next computing platform, the emphasis around how can it help connect people more deeply? And certainly, right, immersive experiences are a phenomenal way to do that, that hopefully, right, can be accessed by anybody, anywhere they are. I think it's also a really good reminder of, like, to ground ourselves in the use cases, right? And, like, what are the problems that we're trying to solve? What are the challenges that we're trying to solve? And so there are different technologies. Just think about the metaverse. It's a wide spectrum. There's different entry points that offer people different levels of immersion, right? So I think it really depends on what's the use case, the objective that you're trying to accomplish, and then what makes the most sense from there. In some cases, right, it may be right, a VR headset. In other cases, right, it might be a mobile device, right, or your computer. And so I think it's a good reminder sort of in grounding back to, like, what are we trying to accomplish and what's sort of the best task at hand. But looking back at those sort of prior shifts in technology, I think it's a good reminder for us that there's always been sort of that side order of skepticism. And it's good, right? I think, you know, that we will change is hard. We will challenge things that we don't know or are unfamiliar, right, or seem foreign to us. And so I think we've certainly seen sort of a lot of that right now. But I think, again, sort of really thinking back to one, let's acknowledge that there's always going to be sort of that skepticism. But to really make those big shifts, right, have required sort of bold moves that sometimes require taking a bit of a risk and continuing to push forward, right, even when it may seem a bit unclear.
I think that's a good way to look at it. I like that idea of problems first, technology second. So many people are doing the opposite and trying to find a way to fit this technology into something. But I think you start with use cases, you start with problems, and you solve for those problems. So that makes a lot of sense.
I feel like sometimes the challenge is there's so much happening, right? In the space, there's so much evolving, which is amazing. But sometimes also, like in talking with leaders, it's difficult then to figure out, well, where do I start, right? And so again, you know, you sort of really dial down to what's the use case or what's the problem? And that helps then sort of align, okay, what are the metrics that you're looking at? What are you trying to move the needle on, right? And from there, it becomes a much more focused effort rather than, you know, just kind of getting lost in so much that's going on. So come back to the problem, come back to the use case. From seeing those past sort of trends in technology and computing platforms, there's always been sort of that skepticism. I think, you know, we've sort of seen some of that now. I think we're really excited about what the future could hold and what that can mean for us.
Here's a future of work trend that I'm interested in asking you about. It's a question about return to office. And I know that in the last few weeks, Meta's made their own announcements about people coming back 3 days a week, and other companies are making folks come back. Because you're so close to a lot of CEOs and C-suite folks out there, this must be coming up a lot. And then given Meta does so much with remote collaboration, what are you hearing out there in the world about face-to-face and people coming back to work? There's some reticence about employees coming back, and there's folks in management that want it to happen. Talk to me about that. Where's your head at when it comes to return to office?
Yeah, this is a fantastic question. And I would say it's something that, like, all of the leaders that I have met with, it's something that, you know, they and their organizations are thinking about. I think everyone is trying to sort of navigate that. And it's hard, right? Because, you know, I think for a time, people might have, you know, thought of work as a place that you went, right, versus something that you do. And I think very much now we would, you know, believe the latter, right? And we've sort of seen that people can be effective, right, and productive in many places. I think remote work, the benefit has also been that it's opened up a lot of opportunity, right, for, you know, people to maybe be able to better align to maybe their personal priorities and interests, right, being closer to family and loved ones. It's also opened up, right, the chance to bring in new talent that maybe previously was you could not tap into. And so I think the economic and the personal opportunity and the flexibility is incredible. I think it's hard, right? There's no silver bullet to this. And I think we're sort of seeing that as different organizations are trying, you know, different strategies and approaches. Again, it's something that I'm hearing in every conversation that I'm having with, you know, leaders that we're talking to outside and externally to try to figure out. It's very hard to think about a world in which, like, it springs back to, like, every day back in office. I don't think we can go then. I think we've seen examples of how people have been more, you know, productive and effective while being able to work right in a way that makes sense for them. But there is definitely, I think it is this interesting balance because even, you know, obviously we spend a lot of time talking about technology and the benefits and how it's, you know, the evolution of new platforms, especially immersive technology. The intent is to not replace, right, the magic of being together in person. That's always going to be the richest way that we can connect. But I think we're in a moment where the challenge, and I think the opportunity, is how do you bring people together intentionally, right? Like, it can't just be, hey, you know, come back to the office and then, like, magically, right, there will be collaboration that happens. But how do you create spaces and how do you create moments, right, where that can be more meaningful to come together? The role that I'm in now, like, we get the opportunity to deliver, like, what we call executive briefings, right, which are usually very, like, highly immersive sessions that are happening, you know, with leaders together in person. And, like, the magic that you get of some of the collision of ideas and thoughts is remarkable. Yeah. But I think the challenge, right, is, okay, how do you bring people back together intentionally, right? And what do you do to make that meaningful? Because if someone, you know, more and more, right, people are working in distributed teams, global teams. And so if somebody comes to an office and they're going to sit on video conferencing all day, like, is that really the most effective, right, use of time? Yeah. And what's so how point? Do you then architect experiences and spaces, right, that can be meaningful? And I don't think there's a silver bullet. I think we're going to see a lot of different approaches and ideas as people try to figure out, you know, what makes sense for them, right, in their organizations.
Yeah, that's the big challenge. You know, interestingly, I've been talking to a lot of young people that have never really worked in an office before, and they're feeling that they want to have more face time. They want to have more face time with their leaders. They want to have more face time with their colleagues. And it takes me to another question for you around mentorship. Mentorship that you do with others, but also folks in your life that have been great mentors to you. And as we evolve and work changes for us in the future, I always think about what that's going to look like for my kids when they're out in the workforce. You know, how are you going to be mentored, and how are you going to learn from people above you? Can you talk about mentors in your life that have been impactful?
Yeah, it's a great topic because especially I think back to, for me personally, like my journey, especially like I'd say some of the closest mentors that I still have to this day are people that I met very, very early, right, in my career and sort of my work journey. And those relationships just were further developed and forged over the years. And so I think this is a really interesting topic too, that organizations will sort of navigate, is how do you sort of create those opportunities for mentorship? For me personally, you know, and I love this question when it came across, you know, there's one person I've been lucky enough where I have a couple of very close mentors who I've known for over 10 years at this point. Thank goodness they are very patient, because I have probably tested their patience along the way. One of my very, very close mentors was a colleague and is a very dear friend of mine. Her name is Nicole. We first met while I was at Deloitte, right? And so like that was my sort of first real stint of my career coming out of college, spent a number of years there. We met sort of early in my time there, got a chance to work on a few different projects, and we were working on a few other initiatives along the way. And then we just really hit it off. You know, I was early in my journey. She was doing work in an area that I was, you know, sort of deeply passionate about. And so there was a natural connection there. But then it really evolved, because then I went on, worked at a couple of startups, was in a number of different roles over the years, and then eventually got to Meta. I sort of look at like I've had a path that maybe would be a little bit more of like a generalist, which I would say, if there's a phenomenal book called Range that I would recommend to people who are sort of thinking about how they can maybe apply this mindset to their own journey.
Oh, great. Yeah.
And sometimes I look at it and it's been great, because you've had a lot of different experiences. It could also be challenging, because then at times it could be hard to find people who have had maybe similar journeys that you could sort of use as a model, right, or a reference to think about how do you architect what your journey can look like. But Nicole had been in a number of different roles. She had worked at a number of different companies, both in industry, on the tech side, startups, bigger companies, and so we just sort of really naturally gravitated to one another. And every time that I've either considered like a new role or potentially taking an opportunity at a new company, Nicole is usually the first person that I call. And so she's been an incredible sounding board, and I really value her counsel. But it's so, I think more than ever, right, it's so important to have people like that that can offer that type of objective perspective along the way, right? Because I think it's great to have mentors within the organization that you're a part of. And I've certainly have a few within Meta that I've been lucky to know for a number of years. But it's nice, I think, to have someone outside, but who also has known you over a longer period of time, right? Because you're able just to have deeper types of conversations, and they could probably anticipate some of the things that you may bring up before you do. And I think there's so, so much value in having people like that in your corner.
When you think about the things that you're most excited about in the next 5 years, if you were going to give advice to some young people coming up right now, what would you say to them? How would you prepare them for this future?
Oh my gosh. Don't be afraid to explore and experiment, and don't be afraid if you don't have maybe a clear idea of what you want to be when you grow up, because things change so, so quickly. Like when I first started, I would say that when I graduated college, I wasn't like, oh yeah, I'm going to graduate and I want to be a consultant, or I want to be in strategy consulting. But I just happened to like end up in that space. And then things start to take a turn and the path goes in many different ways. And so I think the most important thing is to be open, right? Have a sense of what are areas that you're interested in, have a passion for, but don't necessarily maybe be fixed to, hey, there's only one path for me to get there. Because I think what you'll find, right, is that there's many, many different roads that may lead you to the same outcome that you want to have. Sometimes I think it's hard. I think we put a lot of pressure on ourselves early on that we need to have everything figured out, or, you know, I should be in this role by, you know, then, and just try to let some of that go, right? I think understand what excites you and what motivates you, and experiment with a few, you know, different paths. And then I think it helps you as much figure out what you want to do, but more importantly, maybe what you don't want to do or what you aren't motivated by, which that type of clarity is incredible to have. I would have loved to have some of that earlier in my journey. But I think it can be hard because you just feel a lot of that pressure at the beginning. And so I'd say, you know, explore and experiment, and also try to read and consume as much as you can. I think more than ever, there's so much information at our fingertips, right? Whether you want to go build, you know, new skills or get a certification or move into a different industry, there's so much information out there. And so I think that's one of probably the best skills that you could develop, is kind of being a scout, for lack of a better word, and really being able to keep a pulse on a market and an industry look for those trends in those emerging areas. And so I'd say try to read and consume as much as you can. Find people who are talking about the topics you're passionate about. Take a look at like, what do they follow? You know, what are the sites, the news sources, and just really immerse yourself in, because the information is such at your fingertips. But just be comfortable. Like, if you don't have maybe a clear idea, and don't feel like you have to have a fixed path. There's many, many ways. And sometimes the best ones are the ones that you least expect.
That's great advice. All right, I'm going to put you on the spot. I want you to describe the future of work to me in two words.
Awesome. Well, this is a great question. I think it's hard to boil it down to two words, but the two that I keep coming back to often when I think about this would be immersive and connection. And I think there's a great connection and intersection here. And so on the first, right, immersive technologies, they're going to help spark new ways of working, some of which we're already starting to see today, which is extremely exciting. And ultimately, right, help create this richer sense of connection. We get to a place, right, where people can feel really present, productive, and connected, regardless of physical distance. I think this is an important part here, right? And in turn, that will help level the playing field, right, for workers and for folks wherever they are and whatever job that they do, which should help empower us to decouple our physical location from our work opportunity. And I think under kind of pinning both of these, as we think about sort of an evolving world of work and working in the metaverse, it can open up opportunities for all. It's incredibly, incredibly important, right, that it's built with equity for workers with different geographies, different job roles, different tasks at heart.
Yeah, I love it. Thank you. That's great. Dan, I really appreciate talking to you today. I am so excited about the future, and you are really right in the middle of it in so many ways. And it was really fun talking with you.
This was a blast. Thanks, Boaz. I was glad to be a part of this, and I'm excited for us to continue the conversation. And I think we're at a very exciting moment in time. I think we're very lucky and grateful that we could be doing the work that we are right now.
Well, I'm definitely going to want you back on again so that we can check in and understand what the future is.
You can count me in. I'm looking forward to it.
Awesome. Thanks, Dan.
Cool. Thanks, Boaz. Take care.
That's a wrap. Thanks for tuning in. Such a pleasure to have Dan as our guest on today's episode. Dan's knowledge about the emerging field of AI and XR is amazing, along with his insights into how Meta thinks about what is to come in the future of work. If you want to learn more about Dan and his work at Meta, you can find him on LinkedIn and Twitter. If you are interested in how Meta thinks about AI and XR, definitely connect with him and keep up with his posts and activity online. I continue to be amazed by the guests we've had on the show, and I'm excited about the ones joining us in the near future. I truly appreciate you spending your time with us. Thank you for listening to the episode, and don't forget to subscribe to the podcast for more exciting interviews and to the Simply Augmented newsletter for weekly updates on how AI can save you time and make you money. The Shift Podcast is produced and sponsored by Simply Augmented, audio production and engineering by The Monkey Pants. Our theme music is by Dave Angel.